A show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yes, sir, and ma'am, and whoever is watching us right now, it is Bucket Strategy Investing. It's time for yet another hour of the program, another hour of the best in money information right here with ya. We're here, as always, to answer your phone calls and your emails. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, here with me once again from Lucia Capital Group, our main brain trust advisor. A lot of action in previous hours, and there's more to come this hour. A lot of topics to cover, so we're going to sort of get into the heart of the matter, I guess, right now. Now, if you got a money question of any kind, you can take part in our discussion. You can call us right now, because we do have every line open, oddly enough, at the top of the hour, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You want to add your email questions, you want to add them to the ones that we've got right here on the list, you go over to the wealthed.com website, our website, click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. So, Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, he returns for this hour, courtesy of the people at Lucia Capital Group. Now, we try on this program to deliver to you the strategies that are right for you, okay? The money strategies, that's what they are. They can help you get through retirement, potentially. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air, you can always call Professor Plumber, anyone at Lucia Capital Group. Their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Your situation is, of course, unique to you, so you need to find out if your individual retirement goals and needs are being met. They've got access to a network of brain trust advisors all across the country, and Lucia Capital Group will help you out right there. Once again, and we thank them for sponsoring this show, off the air, 800-644-1150. Our important number right now on the air, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. I want to bring this up one more time. We were talking last hour, you may not have heard if you're just tuning in, about pension maximization and ways to allow your spouse, just very quickly, and we'll get to the calls in just a second, but very quickly, Professor Plum, when you take a pension, well, first of all, let's back up even more. When you get your pension projections, yes, right, which you often do, it'll say you're going to get X amount of dollars at whatever age it is, 65 or whatever.
60, whatever.
Yes, and they're going to tell you, here's how much you're going to get. That is actually not the default amount that you're really going to get.
Well, it may or may not be.
If you're married.
You do need to check and find out whether or not that is. What option that is carrying. Is that a life-only option? And if it's a life-only option and you're married, that isn't the number you're going to get. Is that a life and joint survivor option? Well, if so, which option are they providing? 100% to your spouse, 50% to your spouse? This is all part of planning so that you know what you're going to be able to get and what you're going to be able to leave if you die too soon for your spouse. So you want to understand what the baseline incomes are when you get to retirement. Social Security is one of those incomes. We talk about it a lot. Which option should you take? Pensions, another source of income that you can't mess up, the market can't mess up. So you want to understand what your options are so that you can make the best use of the money going forward. And the idea is to look at this before you get to retirement. Because before you get to retirement, you may have options. Once you get to retirement, you may not be able to change your mind, and you may have to take a discount. You may have to do something that may not be the most efficient use of the money, or wouldn't have been the most efficient use of the money if you'd planned ahead of time.
No, so if you have a pension and you're married, this especially works when you're married, if you have a pension, it's good to be thinking about these things well in advance of, say, age 65 or 60 or whatever, and it has to do with your insurability and buying a life insurance policy. So we'll try to cover some of that a little bit later on this hour. I do want to take some phone calls. We have, looks like, three lines open still, though. 877-PLANNER, our number. 877-752-6637. Let's move along first this hour to Brad in Eugene, Oregon. Hello, Brad.
Hello. Love the show, guys. I watch you every day.
Thank you.
I've got four rental properties. I retired a couple of years ago. And I heard you guys talking last week about step up and step down in basis.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if I would be better off leaving. I'm thinking about getting the rental property, you know, cleared up and convert to cash and stuff for my heir, for my daughter. And I was wondering if I'd be better off leaving. Is it a step up in basis if I leave the properties to her? Does she inherit them at the market value, and then she can sell them as she wishes or whatever?
Yeah, so what happens is when you, if you own the properties when you die, your daughter, I'm assuming your daughter's the one that's inheriting the properties, your daughter's basis in the property changes to the date or to the value on the date that you died. So what did you, let's pick one of these properties. What did you pay for it originally?
Oh boy, I've had them for several years.
So we're assuming there's a lot of appreciation built into them?
Yes. And I've done some 1031 exchanges, so it's gotten complicated to a mess where I'm not sure exactly how to get out of them now.
Unfortunately, we tell that this is a lot of times where people will hold on to them even though they don't like them anymore. They don't want to do the They don't want to do the math and the tax return to get rid of it, so they hold on to them until they die. And now we know exactly what the basis is. It's your daughter has appraisal done based on the date of your death, and that is her basis for selling it.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking she's not going to want to manage them probably, but it may be better off to hold them and let her dispose of them, huh?
That's up to you. From a tax standpoint, from purely a tax standpoint, yes, it's better that she sells them after you pass. From your standpoint, from a hassle standpoint, from a headache standpoint, you know, from a management standpoint, you may want to sell them well before that. So that you can be out from under them, so you can go and enjoy your retirement. That's up to you. But from a tax standpoint, yes.
That's what I was thinking, but they've been relatively trouble-free, so.
All right. Then you have to make up your mind, you know, if they ever do become a hassle, you can always go through the and pay the taxes on them when you sell them. If you don't want to pay the taxes and you don't mind just giving them to your daughter, let her sell them, she'll receive them with a stepped-up tax basis. And there won't be any depreciation recapture either. You sell them, you get to recapture the depreciation you took.
Yeah, for the last 25 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, it can be a very taxing experience selling a long-time rental property that has a lot of appreciation in it.
Now if I'm wanting to sell them, you know, before I pass, do I need a CPA probably for that?
Whether you use a CPA or somebody who's just very good at accounting for real estate, I think either one will do. But you want somebody, do you do your own tax returns or do you have somebody else do them?
No, I don't. And I've had a couple different people over the years, and the person I'm with now isn't real sure what my basis in some of them are, is. And
really?
Well, that makes a problem for your ongoing current tax return, because that's how your depreciation schedules are based.
Yeah.
Have you added stuff to the properties or improved them? Is that the deal since you bought it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that. I'm not a real good real estate investor. I enjoy properties and I enjoy working on them and stuff, but I'm not a real good bookkeeper. So.
Well, you know, that's true. That's
not uncommon.
In fact, it's very common, Brad.
So do you have any relatives that are like 100 years old?
No.
Darn. So we could give it to them, put them in a living trust, so you get them back at their death.
And then all of a sudden, the whole reset of basis and depreciation recapture.
It was an idea.
Yeah, I like that idea.
You have any that are, you know.
But the only problem with that is making sure you get them back.
Yeah, complicated more.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for the info, and that'll help.
Okay, Brad.
Yeah, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Yeah, it's important to understand. Now, I guess what he could do, I mean, if you had to, is you could just take your original basis, what you paid for it, and forget the, improvements and just base it on that.
Yeah, and the only silver lining in this, if you had to sell them now and he's not totally sure of what his basis is, if he makes a good attempt at establishing his basis, he may not know the exact number.
But the IRS certainly
they don't know either.
Well, and we had that too.
And what they want is a reasonable. I mean,
if they came, they say, "Well, how'd you get to that number? If you can present a reasonable case as to how you figure that's happened."
That what they don't want to see is, okay, you sold the property for $450,000, and you've owned it for 27 years, and you're saying your basis is $430,000.
Yeah, that's not
okay.
Apply.
That's probably not a realistic number.
Right. So if they ever come to you and you sell it and you say, here's my basis and here's how arrived at it.
And you have a coherent thought process and you've laid it out, what are they? It's hard for them to argue with it too.
Well, no, because they're not going to, they could say, well, no, that's not correct. And you turn to them, you say, well, what are you going to tax me on? Then they have to come up with something.
They'll say, I'm going to tax you on everything from zero.
On the original or whatever it was that you paid, because you know what you paid for it. That's true. In fact, we have similar issues with those old dividend reinvestment programs.
Yes.
Remember?
Prior to 2012.
Yeah, if you bought them in your personally, I mean, you wound up with 15,000 different numbers, and the IRS, you know, you say, well, okay, what's your original or what's your basis now after all these years? Well, I don't even know how people come up with it, frankly.
It's amazing that, you know.
Yeah, you had that, and so as we understand it, the IRS has been accepting oftentimes in those drips. Of somebody
reasonable
said,
numbers.
Here's how I came up with it. And you have a little list. You say, this is where I went through. And so I came up with this number. It's about as close as I think I can get. They've been fairly good.
I haven't heard of any backlash from that.
Yeah, but exactly.
There are people that have done it that I don't know about, too.
Right, exactly. So anyway, just that thought came to mind. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number. Got to take a break already, but we got some lines open. In fact, 3, 4 right now. 877-PLANNER. If you got money questions, now is a great time to call because the Brain Trust will answer them for you. Doesn't matter what it is. We'll talk to you about it. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing, talking to you about your money and all things related to strategy, retirement, Social Security. Oh, and speaking of Social Security, too, not only do you have this the Social Security show every single Tuesday at WealthEd.com, but dig this, at our website, at our Facebook page, you can download the Big Changes Coming to Social Security. That's what it's called. It's like a little guide. It's about 5-6 pages, but it's packed full of information about the changes that are actually already here, certainly, with Social Security. Things that you can do, things that you should do, things that you don't even need to do. But you need to be aware of how these changes may or may not affect you. So, you go to our website, you can go there at the and click on the Facebook link. That'll take you right to our Facebook page. Or just if you're on Facebook, search Wealth Ed, WEALTH, Wealth Ed, and they'll tell you all about the, it's a link. Just click on the link and you can download this particular file. Easy to read, easy to understand, and if it's not, you just give us a call right here on the program. You know where we are. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Let's get back to the phone lines. Jim, Vancouver, Washington. Hi, Jim. How can we help you today?
Hi. That was a great lead-in that you just went through for my question. I probably should go to the site, but now that I'm on with you.
Well, we're easier.
Yeah. Question.
All right.
All right. The first is that my understanding is if you are full retirement age or over and have not done a file and suspend yet, you need to do that before the end of April so that your spouse can still do a restricted application. Is that correct?
Well, not necessarily. You need to be able to do it so that she can take a restricted application from you without you actually receiving your benefit. She can do a restricted application once she gets to full retirement age as long as you have filed. And if you file and are receiving it, she can do the restricted application. If you want to let your benefit grow until age 70, and between now and age 70, you want your wife to be able to take a spousal benefit from your work record, then yes, you have to suspend before April 29th.
All right, that answered the second part. So if you will not be taking it because you're not 70 yet and your spouse is a couple years younger than you, unless you filed and suspended before the end of April, she will not be able to get the restricted benefit.
Not while you're waiting. Not until you turn 70 in that respect.
Great. Thanks a lot, because now, a buddy of mine just sent out an email to a bunch of friends and said, well, I'm over 66, so I don't have to do a thing. I thought that's not what Rick's told people.
Well, it depends, though, because not everybody should file and suspend, even if they are 66 or older at this point. Which way is better? Is their spouse taking a benefit from them a better deal, or is the individual who's 66 or older taking a spousal benefit from the spouse a better deal? You know, so who's going to file the application for the spousal retirement benefit? You or your spouse? If it's going to be you, because you're going to get half of their full retirement age benefit for the next 4 years, then you do not want to file and suspend. You want to wait until they file and then take a restricted application from them. On the other side, if you want them to get a spousal benefit from you, and that's larger than the one you would get from them, or for a longer period of time, then you would file and suspend by the end of April, April 29th, actually.
Great. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay, Jim, thank you for calling.
It's a confusing area. I ran into this with somebody else the other day that was just couldn't get it through their head whether they should file or suspend.
File and suspend?
But they were 5 years apart. So the file and suspend, the older one wanted to wait until age 70, and they were thinking, well, I've got to suspend. They're 66 right now. I got to suspend now so that my spouse can get a benefit. Well, the spouse is not going to be able to claim a retirement benefit.
Because they're too young right now.
And they won't be full retirement age. They want to do a restricted application.
Yes.
The younger one is the higher benefit.
Right.
They expect both of them to live a long time.
But by the time the younger one hits full retirement age when they can do it, the other one's already taken their Social Security.
They don't need to suspend for that option because, like you said, they will already be receiving. So not everybody needs to suspend. The only time people need to suspend is if the person that's old enough to suspend wants to wait until 70 to take their own benefit. And during that period of time, they want somebody else to get a benefit from their work record.
Between the ages of 66 and 70.
Otherwise, the only benefit for filing and suspending is that undue benefit. The ability to change your mind between now and age 70 and unsuspend the benefit and get retroactive payments for the suspended benefits. To be honest, most people, I mean, that was a very, very unused benefit.
No, might have been unused, but I sure like at least the option.
Well, that's why before these rules went into place, my opinion was if you were 66, full retirement age or older, and unless you were going to take a benefit from somebody else, a restricted application, there was no reason not to file and suspend.
Right.
So let's put it that way. If you are 66 before the end of April, and you are not going to be taking a spousal benefit from anybody else for the next 4 years, or a survivor benefit, or any other benefit from somebody else's work record, there's no problem. File and suspend. But if you plan on taking another benefit from somebody else at any time between now and your age 70, do not file and suspend.
No, there you go. That's great advice. And that's something else that I don't read too often in the generic. It's just,
well, they're telling everybody that they have to do something
by
April. If you're 50 years old, you've got to do something by April 29th.
Well, here's what they want you to do. We want you to click on our site. So that's what we're going to do. All right. Let's see. Pam, this says Brandon, Florida. Okay, Brandon, Florida. I have no other income for 2015. If I take a $16,000 distribution from my regular IRA, not the Roth IRA, do I need to file income taxes for 2015? I am a head of household. The sum of standard deduction for head of households plus two exemptions is $17,250.
Well, from an income tax perspective, your head of household deduction plus your exemptions equals more than your gross income. So you won't owe any income taxes. So the reason to file an income tax return to pay the taxes doesn't work here. You don't owe any taxes. So the reason to file an income tax return is it for just the income tax reconciliation? It's for maybe another reason. If they did any withholding at all on your IRA distributions, you want to file a return and get that back. If you're eligible for a tax credit, an earned income tax credit, you're head of household, you got some dependents, you may be eligible for an earned income tax credit. You file a tax return, and even though you don't owe any money, you get some money back. So there are other potential reasons to file a tax return other than to pay the taxes that you owe, or to get back the income that you don't owe from your withholding. It's to get a credit. And as a head of household with dependents, with only $16,000 of total gross income, it's very, very likely that you will be eligible for some form of a tax credit that's refundable to you, free money. And so that's why you file a tax return. You don't need to do it just to pay taxes because you don't owe any taxes. But that's only part of it.
Yeah.
They may give you some money back anyway.
Yeah, maybe it's a hassle, whatever. You don't want to bother with it. But, I mean, it's probably
not all that. My guess is it's several thousand dollars.
I would think you think it's several thousand.
Well, depending
on... Based on
having dependents head of household, and the earned income tax credit could be very nice. Now, they are retired, but or they have no other income. They didn't say they were retired. I would do it because, hey, it could be worth some money to you.
Yeah, well, there you go, Pam. Try it. Why not? Couldn't hurt. Just use a little bit of your time. Okay, I've got to take a break. 877-PLANNER. We got some time, but not a ton of time for you to get your phone calls in. Ask us a money question. We have three lines open right now, 877-752-6637. More money strategies, too. When we come back, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're back right after this. Is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're here for you every day this time. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions, talking to you about anything that's on your mind from a financial standpoint. We will answer those questions right here live on the program. We've had a couple of Social Security questions, both in email and phone call form so far today, and there are going to be more coming up every Tuesday. I'll just tell you this, every Tuesday afternoon, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. We got a special show devoted to Social Security. We call it The Social Security Show. And you can watch it live every week. Or actually, I think Biz TV probably reruns it too. But you can watch it live at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time every Tuesday, only at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Answer plenty of emails, talk to you about strategies, and you can also call a hotline, which you'll see at wealthed.com. Hotline and leave us your recorded message, 800-838-0483. That's the number, 800-838-0483. You can leave your question in recorded form, and we will replay it on the program and answer it right there. It's a cool way to be interactive. The Social Security Show, every Tuesday, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern time, only at wealthed.com. Okay, back to the phone lines, 877-PLANNER. Still have two lines open, 877-752-6637. Jose up next, Las Vegas. Hi, Jose.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Great. I was driving in the car, and I was paying attention to the previous caller.
Yes.
And what you were saying about people that are retired, and my mom has been retired and just receiving Social Security, but ever since my dad passed away, they haven't done, or she hasn't done tax return. And just listening to what you just said, can my mom file as a head of household?
Well, there are requirements. There are requirements for head of household, and there has to be somebody that lives in a dependent that lives in that household that they're basically providing a home for. A lot of seniors do not file a tax return. A lot of seniors don't have, but they're by themselves or they're just a married couple, and so they can't qualify. Even the single individuals can't qualify as head of household, and so they don't qualify for the tax credits I was talking about. The individual that we were speaking about, it was an email. The only income they had for the year was an IRA distribution. They weren't even on Social Security. And they said they were head of household. I didn't say they could. I said they told us they were the head of household and had two dependents. And so because of the information they provided, I said the reason to file a tax return would be to potentially get a tax credit. And as a head of household with multiple dependents, there should be a credit for low income issues like they were talking about. Unfortunately, low income is not the only thing that gets them to the credits. Having only Social Security income for a retiree, a single retiree, doesn't get you to a credit that we were talking about before. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's unlikely that your mom will be eligible to get the credits I was speaking of. And it also, she's the only member of her household. She can't be head of household.
Sorry to interrupt. It's just a little bit different because my brother has been living with my mom, and he has, he just recently got employed, like maybe, three or four weeks ago. But, he was unemployed for like 2 years.
Okay.
Living with my mom.
And so
would she qualify?
She may have qualified for those years if his income was under certain thresholds, and she was providing more than half of his support, and he was a member of the household for the entire year. So there may have been something she could have done as a head of household in the years where he was living there and he was not making any money. Now, if he was making money more than, $6,000, a little over $6,000, then she won't be able to claim him as a dependent. But if he's living there, she's providing all his support, and he's not making any income, she should have been able to claim him as a dependent. As a dependent, she would have gotten a head of household status, and there may, I'm not saying there will, but there may have been something available to her.
Oh, okay. All right. Right. Well, I appreciate you answering that question. You know, and
now that he's working, it's not going to work as well, though.
Yeah, and he just started working a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, he was unemployed though for like 2014 and 2015, and
so a couple things. If she goes back to the 13 and 14 return, she may be able to get a credit. I don't know if it's available for her. If she paid any taxes in those periods of times, she can redo her tax return potentially as head of household and reduce the taxes that she paid, which means she could get a refund of any taxes that she paid, even if she doesn't get the credit. So it's worth looking into.
Yes, it is. It is worth looking into. Okay,
Jose.
Well, thank you for your time and for answering the question.
No, you're welcome, Jose. Hang on if you have any other questions. We'll be happy to talk to you more about this stuff. We don't talk a ton about head of household, but yes, there's a requirement. There are criteria you have to meet in order to be head of household.
You have to have a household to be the head of.
Right, exactly. There has to be somebody in
there. A single member household doesn't qualify.
Well, I mean, you might call yourself king of the hill.
But it doesn't qualify for HOH.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely. So there you go. Okay, let's get to another email or two. By the way, you want to email us. You go to our website, wealthed.com, WEALTH, wealthed.com. And 877-PLANNER is our number. Pat in Gresham, Oregon. This one actually just came in, after the show started. So it might not be on your particular list. Social Security question. With this deadline, I need some advice. I just turned 63. My wife is 60. Both retired with total pensions bringing home $8,000 monthly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We owe $28,000 on our home with a final payment in May of 2018. That's nice again. We also owe $188,000 on a vacation rental property with 12 years left on that.
Okay.
We have about $35,000 in a Roth and $300,000 in 403B annuity. We have about $35,000 in money market funds. My question is, under my current circumstances, hey, what is my best strategy for claiming Social Security?
Well, you gave us a lot of information, but you left out one thing. How long might you or your spouse live? If neither of you has very good life expectancy, then you should claim now, and your wife will claim for her a Social Security benefit at 62. If one of you has a long-term life expectancy, then we have some decisions to make. Let's assume that your benefit is higher than your spouse's benefit. I did that on purpose because you're older. And then what you could potentially do is when your spouse gets to 62, she applies for her benefit. Yes, it's reduced, but she starts getting that benefit. And then when you get to 66, then you apply for a restricted application from her benefit. And you receive 50% of not what she's receiving, but 50% of what she would have received at her full retirement age. And you get that for 4 years, and then you turn your benefit on at 70. That's a pretty good game plan if at least one of you will live a long time.
Where does the pension, they don't say where the pensions are coming from here.
No.
Whether they're from a government job where they didn't pay into Social Security. Is that going to be a factor somewhere, possibly?
It depends on whether one of them has a pension from work not covered by Social Security, both of them have a cover.
Which we don't know.
And yes, that does have an impact on this. And so if all $8,000 is his pension from a government job where he did not pay into Social Security,
then
we ignore him completely for Social Security. Because he didn't pay into it. Right. He got that $8,000 a month pension. Now we just look to her. And she doesn't have very many options. It's all about her life expectancy.
Yeah. Now obviously, I believe that they both have some claim on Social Security. Because he says, what is my best strategy for claiming? So I'm assuming that at least one of them, he probably certainly has some.
And her probably as well. But
yeah.
I don't know. Those are all important questions.
Yeah. So if we had more information, if you're on the phone, these are the questions that we probably would have asked.
He can do a restricted application from her work record as long as she is receiving a benefit. It doesn't work the other way around. She will not be able to wait until full retirement age and take a benefit from him if he's receiving a benefit because she's too young. To have that option of choosing to take only a spousal benefit once you got to full retirement age is only available if you were at least 62 years of age by January 1, 2016. If you weren't 62, you don't have that option. He was 62 before the end of last year, before the end of 2015. He still can. But the first criteria of taking a spousal retirement benefit is, has your spouse started their benefit? I cannot take a spousal retirement benefit, regardless of how old I am, if my spouse, the work record that I'm going to pull a benefit from, has not applied for their benefit. So we have to look at what's available and what's not available.
Yeah, another important point to bring up, too, when you're talking about spousal benefits is that once you're eligible to take a spousal benefit, meaning that the spouse is that you want to take it off of has already applied, it doesn't matter when that spouse applied, whether it's age 62 or somewhere between 62 and 70.
We get spousal that question benefit, a lot.
Yes, we do. The spousal benefit is always based on the worker, in this case, worker's full retirement age benefit, even if they took it at age 62.
Or they took it at 70.
Right. The only reduction that'll take place has to do with the spouse who's taking it. How old are they? Are they under full retirement age or not? If they're at full retirement age or older, they get the full 50%. I'm sorry, they get the full
50%.
Yeah, 50%. Yeah, of their full retirement age benefit. Okay, got to take a break. Sharon in Las Vegas, stick around. You'll be next. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. You never know. It is a Bucket Strategy Investing. I just looked at the clock. I got there's 7-8 minutes left in the hour. So we're going to get right back to your phone calls. I want to remind you that coming up on this program tomorrow, if you happen to be watching or listening live, we're going to be talking about something called sequence of returns. There's a risk with that. What does that mean? Sequence of returns? What are you talking about? Well, it's an interesting phenomenon that affects people who happen to retire at the quote unquote wrong time. And what's the wrong time for some people? Well, the wrong time is somebody who doesn't have the correct plan and they retire just before the market takes a big dive downward. You can't dive upward, can you? Not on this planet.
You could try.
Well, anyway, yeah, it takes a big dive. All right, heads down. So what are you going to do? Well, are you going to try to predict where the market's going to go? Well, we're going to tell you all about this because strategy can help perhaps mitigate that. The correct strategy. So that's coming up tomorrow on this program. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, little bit of room and a little bit of time, but not much. Sharon is up next, Las Vegas. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a quick question about your credit rating and with credit cards.
Okay.
The last I was told, our credit rating was 840. And recently, a credit card, and we've been with a credit union in Northern Arizona since the early 70s, and we have our main credit card with them, and we pay it off every month. Recently, I was notified by a second credit card that we have, which we have not been using, that they were going to cancel the card for lack of use. And my concern there was, will that affect our credit rating because they're canceling our card, even though it's just because of lack of use?
Okay, it might have a minor effect. Now, let me ask you this. Are you looking to buy something on credit anytime soon?
No.
Are you looking to buy a new car and finance
nope.
it? Are you looking nope. to buy a new house?
No, nope. We own our house.
So let's say your credit score goes from 840 to 820. Does it have any impact on you?
That's what I want to know.
Well, the answer is no, unless you're trying to get credit. And even if it goes from 840 to 820, you're still getting A++ paper. It will not
okay.
have an effect enough to make an issue out of anything. First off, you're not going to borrow any money in the near future. You're not using your credit score anyway, but I know we're very protective of it once we get it up as high as we can get it.
Right. So, I was surprised. So, yes, I have been ever since.
So the only thing that would be an issue is if it affect. It's not going to affect it much. Maybe a couple points okay. here or there. And a couple points on your – I mean, if it was going to take it down, like if you said, well, I have this card that I didn't know about and I found out that I've got a debt on it and I can't afford to pay it and I'm going to miss a payment, how is that going to affect me? That has a big impact. But this
right. –
it's going to be – first off, it's not going to be big enough to make a difference. Second off, you're not going to borrow any money anyway.
No.
Even
yeah,
if
so
they
your credit
dropped
score
it
is,
to 700, which
credit,
will not happen.
Right.
It doesn't affect you.
Well, let me you. Ask you this. If I were to cancel a card because we're not using it, would that have a different effect at all?
I don't know if it's going to have that much of an effect. I mean, I don't know which way impacts it more or less. They keep this stuff pretty guarded as far as what, But if you want to cancel it, you cancel it. It's not. But the biggest issue here is it won't matter if they took your credit score away. It's not going to affect your life.
Okay.
And they're not going to take your credit card your credit score away. It may drop at 10 points.
Yeah,
big deal.
Yeah, nothing to worry
about. Okay, well, I've heard, you know, here and there I've heard that having cards canceled and such will affect your credit or closing an account. And I just wanted to be sure what that actually meant.
Well, what it means is, they said that they have this. What is this?
Some kind of algorithm.
Credit. It's a credit use ratio. So it depends on how much available credit you have versus how much credit you've actually used. And if they reduce the amount of available credit, that just changes that ratio a little bit.
It also has to do with history. Like, my son has a credit card that he got in high school, so he's got about 15 years on it now. And he doesn't use it, but he doesn't want to close it because that's his longest history. And that shows that he's held credit for a longer period of time.
Yeah, but he may need credit in some point.
But he just bought a house. He needed to make sure his credit score was good. And he has other credit cards that are higher. So he wanted, and he's still very protective of his credit, as we all are if we have good credit, as you are, and you don't want to see it go down.
No.
But it's not going to go down enough to matter.
Okay.
Don't lose any sleep.
That was my question, and I certainly appreciate it. It's been on my mind for some time, and I thought, you know, you fellas are the one that give out the good information, and I thought I'll give you a call.
Don't lose any sleep over this.
I appreciate it.
All right, Sharon, thank you for the call. Take care. If she was really concerned, too, I mean, couldn't she just use the card once, and then they'll keep the card?
Yeah,
make a $10 purchase or something and pay it off, and then you can't say it's no longer for non-use.
Yeah.
I don't know if she even still has the card. I've seen stuff on my
I can't find the card.
The card. I mean, it goes back to 2001 or something. I don't know where the card
I've got is. Credit card lines open that as soon as I get the card, the new card in the mail every 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, I cut up the card.
I don't even activate it.
I never activate it and I cut it up.
Well, I hate to do that, but yeah, you could do that, sure. Yeah, doesn't matter. All right, 877-PLANNER. I don't have time to get to the next email. So let's just do the trivia really quickly. We got time. We can do this, right? Let's roll the trivia. This is from the Tax Foundation, by the way. For every $100 that the average American pays in state income tax in a single year, that person also pays $103 in sales tax. That's on consumer purchases throughout the year, and $145 in property taxes.
That's a scary thought. I know what I pay in income taxes to the state, and if I'm paying 103% of that in sales tax, man.
Well, of course, that's average.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that some state income taxes are lower.
Like Oregon?
Yes, and some property and some
property taxes are Oregon zero.
What, zero state income tax?
No, zero state sales tax.
I was going to say.
They have
a nasty
state income tax.
Yes, state sales taxes and $145 in property taxes. Well, you know, there are some states that don't have a state tax, and they make up for it with, property taxes.
My property taxes are not 145% of my income taxes.
No, you happen to live in a state where...
My property tax is relatively low, not low, but... Comparatively, I guess.
Well, it is, especially if you happen to have owned your home for many, many years. You haven't owned it for that long, but there are people who have held their homes for 30, 40 years, and they've got a very low property tax.
I've had somebody down in La Jolla who's lived in their house for 40 years, and their property tax base is a lot less than mine, and their house is worth $5-6 million.
That's it. And
mine's not, by the way.
The politicians can do nothing but gnash and wail and gnash their teeth or whatever it is. All right, we're out of time. If you need the Brain Trust, specifically Professor Plum, off the air, any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, you can talk to them at the off-air number, of course, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. I'm Johnny Dean for Professor Rick Plum. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Indiana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.